to Postcards, a show which takes you across borders without actually leaving home. I'm Wen Jie. Eighty years after Charlie Chaplin made the movie classic, Modern Times, the Great Clown's movies are being restored at a laboratory in northern Italy. Here's Bob Jones with this postcard from Italy.
More than 100 years since the birth of cinema, early motion pictures are getting a new lease of life. Restorers at the Fondazione Cineteca di Bologna carefully enhance every frame of the L'Immagine Ritrovata, newfound image laboratory, part of Bologna University. Davide Pozzi, the director of L'Immagine Ritrovata, explains its origins.
Il laboratorio L'Immagine Ritrovata nasce nel 1992 in seno alla Cineteca di Bologna.
The laboratory L'Immagine Ritrovata was founded in 1992 within the Cineteca di Bologna as an answer to the lack of motion picture restoration laboratories in Italy and Europe. Many laboratories did exist back then for feature and commercial production, but not for motion pictures, which are a totally different workflow. Cineteca di Bologna decided to invest funds and to start masterclasses from 1990 to 1992 and created the L'Immagine Ritrovata in 1992, a laboratory which has taken care of the restoration and conservation of motion pictures since 1992.
The laboratory offers a restoration and conservation service, so all the restorers must offer a deep knowledge of motion picture history and a passion for restoration techniques. When a new box of films arrives, a series of workflows begins, often involving old-fashioned film handling techniques, 4K to 6K scanning, color grading, and often a final print process on a new high-tech film for screening and conservation. All these steps are taken after a long period of study of the author's works. In some cases, this pre-restoration phase can last years. The archive has treated classics such as L'Atalante by Jean Vigo, plus works by masters of cinema including Federico Fellini, Stanley Kubrick, Jacques Tati, and of course Charlie Chaplin. The lab is well named. L'Immagine Ritrovata translates as New Found Image in English. Mariana De Sanctis is the head of restoration at L'Immagine Ritrovata. She explains the excitement of opening a tin of movie archives.
It's a very exciting moment when the box containing the film rolls arrives. Sometimes we have information about the movies, sometimes not. But when we open the boxes, since we are starting with the new project, it's a very emotional moment. After the first inspection, we can determine the best workflow and then we start the restoration.
The first step of the restoration workflow is an accurate diagnosis of the film condition. Many rolls reach the laboratory seriously damaged by humidity, fungus, mold, and a detachment of the emulsion layer. So, at the beginning, the rolls pass through a drying treatment to allow the restorers to unfold the film rolls without any risk to the emulsion. The second step of the workflow is the inspection of the film rolls. If a tear is found, the negative must be cleaned with a tiny soft brush and alcohol. It is then reattached to the original roll by a piece of transparent tape. The film is then scanned, and then it enters the third part of the conservation process. All of the information that has been gathered about the movie or the author is assessed to help reconstruct a copy closest to the original project. Then the movie is color graded and printed back onto film. Pozzi says the advent of digital files was a revolution.
Negli oltre 20 anni di vita del laboratorio è successa forse la più grande rivoluzione da quando è nato il cinema.
Along with the 20 years of life of the laboratory came the biggest revolution since the beginning of the motion picture, the birth of the digital world. Before this, all the other parts of the motion picture industry, sound, colored film and panoramic format, stood inside 35 millimeters of space. With digital, everything became a file. The biggest revolution in motion picture history. Everything changed, both production and restoration. Today, L'Immagine Ritrovata is a laboratory that keeps these two souls. On the one hand, we are still deeply into the analog workflow for conservation and preservation, But on the other hand, we're happy to be able to use digital tools to restore pictures.
The Charlie Chaplin Foundation and the artist's family asked L'Immaginerie Trovata to store and restore the original negatives of his movies. They have restored such movie classics as The Kid, Modern Times and City Lights.
Restoring Charlie Chaplin movies was very emotional, both for me and my team. Handling the camera negative for Modern Times was an unforgettable emotion for movie buffs and for anyone who studies that movie. It was like when we had the negative rows of Lumiere Brothers motion pictures, the first one in motion picture history. In the long period of the restoration of Charlie Chaplin heritage, the most difficult movies were the Keystone's period ones, 35 movies from 1914. These movies were considered incomplete or almost lost, so before the technical restoration, there was a year-long period of research and comparison of the movies in the archives all over the world.
The death of film has often been heralded, but Podzi is certain the digital partnership will help secure its future.
Since I started with this work in 2000, I have heard many people celebrate the funeral of film. We are in 2016 and film still stands. It is true that motion pictures are not shot on film anymore, but film is still the most reliable standard for the conservation of movies. Movies shot on digital are then scanned to film and archived.
These 21st century scientists are ensuring the legacy of the early 20th century's most creative minds.
You're listening to Postcards, a weekly program on events and life stories taking place in different parts of the world. You can listen to our show at newsplusradio.cn. Dancing is putting a smile on the faces of former U.S. veterans in Louisville, Kentucky. Veterans like Roosevelt Smith say the dancing helps forget the pain brought on by the post-traumatic stress disorder he suffered since the Gulf War. Here's Zhao Jianfu with this postcard from the United States.
Roosevelt Smith is one of a few dozen veterans with PTSD, or post-traumatic stress disorder, who are combating their depression and anxiety through dancing. Every week, they forget about their worries as they clap and move along to the music. Deborah Dannenfeld is the Veterans Dance Organizer.
You know, you get moving, the endorphins go up, and you feel good. And they tell me that they continue to feel good even after they go home and maybe into the next day and the next day.
We usually clap while they're coming down.
That's pretty boring.
You ain't ready for this, girl.
With having PTSD, which I do have, it's a way of calming yourself, an outlet, so to speak. We have a lot of things that we do as far as prescription drugs, but this right here is the best prescription that I've had as far as dance. No side effects. Actually, the only thing that'll happen to you is if you smile too much, you know, your cheeks may, you know, you get sore and you get stuck, but it's good to be smiling.
The U.S. Veterans Administration says between 10 and 20% of war veterans are living with PTSD. The idea for the dancing as therapy sessions grew out of a talk Dannenfeld had with a psychiatrist at Fort Knox about a dancing program for active duty military back in 2011. Dannenfeld realized that the barn-style dances were best for military members, and she developed the Dancing Well program for veterans with PTSD beginning in 2013. The lights are kept low for dancers with traumatic brain injuries. The music is cheery without heavy beats, and the location is not advertised, so that anxious visitors have a sense of security and privacy.
We do lower the lights for people who have traumatic brain injuries. We watch the volume of the music. Some people are very sensitive to volumes and noise.
The group sessions are kept small, usually less than 30 people. Army veteran Darlene Messler suffers from PTSD after sexual trauma that she suffered during her time in the military in the 1970s.
Well, like I say, it brings me back to me. It focuses on myself and that I'm having fun, which before, when I was always worried about what other people were thinking or do I do this right or stuff like that, or that when I'm here, I don't have to worry about that. I just have fun. We're all just here as a family and just having fun.
Dannenfeld is working to train volunteers so that they can run their own classes. She depends on private donations to cover the cost of liability insurance that's required to conduct the session. The dances are typically organized into 10 weekly sessions.
You're listening to Postcards, a weekly program on events and life stories taking place in different parts of the world. You can listen to our show at newsplusradio.cn. Increasingly, surgeons are being kept at arm's length from their patients. Robots are taking over, allowing surgery to become less invasive and done with a reduced risk of human error. Here, I'd like to share with you this postcard from the UK. The arms performing this surgery glide effortlessly. They don't get tired and they don't tremble. There is a surgeon in the operating theater, but he's behind the controls of a medical robot. This is what surgery increasingly looks like. Another use of medical technology is being developed at the Imperial College London. Computer-assisted displays help doctors to superimpose scans of structures normally hidden from view. The technology can also warn doctors if they are putting too much pressure in the wrong location. Gauthier Grass, a robotics specialist from the college's Hamlin Center, is developing the technology.
It's very easy to apply too much force and then suddenly rupture it. You're able to warn the surgeon ahead of time to prevent damage.
Researchers are also using robotic-guided probes to manipulate microscopic objects. One day, they'll be able to operate on individual cells. The Hamlin Center's director, Professor Guan Zhongyang, explains why being operated on by a robot will mean faster recovery times for patients.
The type of robot we are making actually getting smaller and smaller can be actually delivered in the needle form. So therefore, you don't need to make incisions. So they can actually follow the curved anatomical pathways reaching to the site.
Dan Melville was born without a right hand. He's testing a new, cheaper-to-make bionic arm in red, a color he chose himself.
You can customize it, you can change the color, so if I go on it black and orange and red, you could have whatever you want, and you would just, and I personally think it's a fantastic opportunity to just kind of show who you really are in your arm, so it makes it more personalized for you as well.
The team at Open Bionics is using relatively cheap 3D printers to produce these bionic arms, a much cheaper approach when others can cost up to 90,000 British pounds. The Bristol-based startup's co-founder, Sammy Payne, says it takes just a few days to make their version, which could sell for as low as £2,000.
All of the grip patterns that the advanced bionic hands can do, all of the movements, we are replicating. And the manufacturing techniques that they're using is a very expensive manufacturing process. Whereas we have desktop 3D printers that just print using plastic filaments. I mean, they're worlds apart, the manufacturing methods. So that's how we can be so low cost.
You're listening to Postcards, a weekly program on events and life stories taking place in different parts of the world. You can listen to our show at newsplusradio.cn. Creating model airplanes is a rare business in Indonesia. One hobbyist is trying to get a slice of the market with models more detailed than his international rivals. Situated on the outskirts of Jakarta, Anglo-Indonesian Aircraft Models sends plane replicas to clients in countries including England, the Netherlands, Australia, Vietnam, and Malaysia. Here's Doris Wan with this postcard from Indonesia.
Globally known for its detailed fiberglass models, Anglo-Indonesia Aircraft Models is Indonesia's most popular model aircraft company. It stands out despite producing its models out of a small workshop. The hands-on production process has put the company and Indonesia on the map in the industry. 43-year-old Morrison has always been fascinated by planes. As a child, he wondered how they managed to fly and carry passengers on long-haul flights. He began to make model planes out of matchsticks and scrap wood, while getting inspiration from magazines as well as his surroundings.
Saya hobi karena waktu kecil kan di lingkungan airport dekat bandara.
This is my hobby because when I was little, I grew up near an airport. So I always saw planes landing and taking off. I even remember the sound of their engines. It's from there that I was drawn to planes.
The success of his business today can be attributed to his childhood fascination. After multiple visits to airline companies like Garuda Indonesia and the now-defunct Merpati for professional input, he began to build his first batch of model aircraft. In 1992, with support from members of the airline industry, Morrison set up his very own model aircraft manufacturing company. With around 20 initial orders, Morrison began to build his models. Clients ranged from aviation magazines to companies who wanted to give them out as souvenirs, and sometimes even pilots. Today, Anglo-Indonesia Aircraft Models has more than 30 staff who handmake between 200 and 300 orders every month. Morrison is aware of his limited production capacity, but prides his company on its attention to detail.
Kalau kita lebih ke detail, di mana karena kita handmade, kita...
We are very particular about detail. Since our models are handmade, details like doors and so on are taken into consideration. But if you compare our models to those mass production models produced in other factories, they only prioritize quantity.
Anglo-Indonesia Aircraft Models has four main steps in its production process. First, the aircraft and molds are designed from scratch. Next, the parts are traced in fiberglass. The unfinished model is then assembled and finished with sanding and painting. The company's specialty lies in producing models that range between 70 centimeters and 1.5 meters in length. Model aircraft collector Tony Jennings has been collecting since 1970 and has accumulated more than 500 models over the years. He partnered with Morrison to set up the company. As a veteran of his hobby, Jennings says that accurate replicas with the right proportions and good finishing are a top priority for collectors.
The Morrison model are, generally speaking, much more detailed than competitor models. So that's why the business, I think, has expanded in recent years. And for collectors, they really like the detail, as much detail as possible.
Morrison's intricately produced planes have sparked foreign demand, with about 80% of the company's orders being exported. But high foreign demand has brought its own set of challenges. Morrison's wife, Nur Hayati, is the company's marketing manager.
Since our products are handmade, we have a large customer base in Europe. They like our products, but we need support from the government for our cargo costs because our main challenge is overcoming the high cost of shipment.
For now, the company remains undeterred. With a global demand that exceeds supply, Anglo-Indonesia continues to provide its small customer base in Indonesia and its European market with immaculate models. But Morrison and Nur Hayati know the sky's no limit, and they want to grow to meet the demand.
You're listening to Postcards, a weekly program on events and life stories taking place in different parts of the world. You can listen to our show at newsplusradio.cn. The promise of a new year is often seen as a chance to start afresh with resolutions. But are you setting yourself up to fail before you've ever started? One food behavior scientist shares his tips for making changes in the kitchen and grocery store. Before we come to the end of today's show, I would like to share with you an extra postcard from the United States. New Year's resolutions to eat healthier and lose weight can fall away faster than needles on yesterday's Christmas tree.
Yes, I am planning to make New Year's resolutions. I always do.
Monique Gray says this while visiting a food hall in Chicago. Cindy E is another visitor at the food hall.
My New Year resolution will be getting a little healthier food, eating out a little less.
But one food behavior researcher says small tweaks to your routines can help you cut down on calories over the long haul. Start with your grocery cart. Cornell University professor Brian Wanzink says it can be a rolling reminder to buy healthy food.
Simply divide your cart in half. Put a code or put a purse there. The whole purpose of doing this is to tell yourself, look, all my fruits, vegetables, and salads go in the front of the cart, everything else in back.
Make a point of winding your way through every inch of the produce aisles.
For every minute you spend going up and down the aisles here in the fruit and vegetable section, you spend about $1.50 more in produce. So the great thing is to leave no path uncovered. Reel yourself through every single part of the fruit and vegetable section. You'll buy more and you'll probably buy less of the other stuff.
Wanzink says small changes that fit into your lifestyle work better than crash diets. At home, you need to be strategic. Keep an eye on where you put food in your refrigerator.
You're about 3 times as likely to take the very first thing you see, bam.
His solution: move the fruits and veggies up from the crisper to eye level so you can see them first. And colors count too. People tend to serve more rice and potatoes on a white plate because there's no contrast. A color plate will make your portion stand out and you'll serve less. The idea is making changes that are barely noticeable. While consuming less food is a popular resolution, cutting back on alcohol is also something many try to achieve. James Farrell, another visitor at the food hall, has made his resolution.
That's going to be one of my resolutions, is to not consume any alcohol whatsoever.
But if you do plan on raising a glass, think about how you pour your drink.
You end up pouring your white wine glass. It's narrow at the base, and so you say, whoa, 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 that's enough, that's enough, that's enough. In contrast to that, when you pour in a red wine glass, which you can see is wider at the base, what happens, you pour and pour and pour, hardly goes up at all, so you keep pouring. And by the time you stop, you've overserved yourself.
Wanzink says you can eat and drink just a little less without feeling deprived. And that could make all the difference as to whether you keep your resolutions or those extra pounds. With that, we wrap up today's postcards. Your comments, suggestions, or questions are always appreciated. And you can contact us via email at postcards@cri.com.cn. For program producer Zhao Jianfu, I'm Wen Jie. See you next week.